Hello, can we get started? Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group to Thursday night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I've asked Zach to give us a joke.
How many alcoholics does it take to change a light bulb? Just one. He holds the light bulb and the world revolves around him.
Thank you, Zach. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Alan. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation. So please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise that might or will distract others. Please no cell phones or other technology. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away. And ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready? If so, let's start the meditation.
Thank you.
Please join me in the fog light prayer. You can find it here on the board. God, there's the solution. From the Big Book, page 17, the tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. And I've asked the gentleman to read Spiritual Experience. Hi, Danny.
Good evening. I'm Danny. I'm an alcoholic.
Danny?
This is a spiritual experience which can be found on pages 567, 568 of the Big Book. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which, upon careful reading, shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, so frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experience are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Danny. Please remain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane or meeting mode, or just turn off. At this time, I'd like to introduce our speaker, Joe B., and I've been listening to him for a couple of years, and I believe... I know that I get fed every time I hear him share the message, and I believe he walks and talks this message, and walks with integrity, and I see that in his spirit. So, I hope you enjoy the speaker.
Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic and a member of the Wednesday night Big Book Study Group. My name is Joe. Great to be here. Good to see all of you here. And well, you know when somebody, I mean, there are certain things about when you meet and get to know someone that after a while you sense that they're walking on a a rather humble plane, like a rather modest plane. And, you know, especially if you know that individual and you've seen them here and there, you know, year to year. Don't spend a lot of time together, but you've been calling him one name and he has another name. And that's this young man right here. I've been calling you Ryan for... And you know what? What's really unique, normally you would be corrected. But somebody that doesn't want to back you up or make you feel uncomfortable and say, that's not my name, to where, like, you know, it would naturally if you find out you're calling somebody by the wrong name. But out of respect and out of consideration for the way I might have felt, he didn't say that. He just allowed me to go ahead and continue to do it and give me the love anyway. So thank you, Alan. I don't know where I got Ryan from, but thank you for accommodating that, I guess. And you are a great man, so it's good to know you. We have been talking about moving from where we were when we got here, that individual that we had become, right? We had become somebody, and through whatever experience we had in life, we had developed these attitudes and these ideas and these beliefs, the belief system that had gotten us to a place. And, you know, it's all part of that culmination of things that get us to a place of complete brokenness, right? I mean, usually we are motivated and dominated by things that are in our mind that we're pursuing and we're trying to achieve and obtain and this and that and the other. And in the endeavor of trying to be satisfied, of trying to be fulfilled and self-fulfilled and satisfied and successful and whatever that looks like. And we usually develop these things that we see other people having that, you know, perhaps they may have things or have accomplished things that we want in our life. So we'll start to adapt. We'll start to, you know, take on these different ways of being, for lack of a better word, that we hope we'll get the same thing. And, you know, so we end up here, right? We end up drinking and doing whatever we do in order to get a sense of ease and comfort to calm the internal conflict that we suffer from. We don't ever equate the way we think it is to why we feel that way. What we do is we typically will hold out here responsible for that dis-ease and uncomfortable feeling and restlessness and irritability and discontentedness with our lives and with life in general, right? So we get to this place and we get here and by the time we get here, we're pretty broken. I was fractured in 1,000 pieces. I couldn't stand me. I hated me. You know, and I don't know about you, but I was running a masquerade. I was pretending to be somebody that I wasn't. I was pretending to be whoever I needed, whoever I thought you wanted me to be, so that you would at least like me or acknowledge me and perhaps think I'm a somebody, because I felt like a complete nobody. Right? I didn't even know who I was. I didn't know what I stood for. That's who I had become. That's not who I was created to be. Nobody's who they were created to be when we get here, period. Nobody. We live in a society that will pretty much dictate what you probably should have in your life in order to be successful and to have an arrived life and to be somebody and, you know, whatever, right? Just look at the advertising. They've figured it out a long time ago. You know, if you just had that, you'd be somebody, right? And somewhere along the way, we just got very misguided you know, I'll speak for myself. I was addicted to the world. I was entrenched in the world. I was a man in the world, a man of the world. That was it. There was no approach or pursuit or even thought of developing a relationship with God. There just wasn't. Until I got to the point where it was either I'm going to take myself out. I had the method. I had the strategy. I had the plan in place to end my life. And I guess when you get to that point and you get to a place where you're really crushed and on your knees and the only place to look is up. It's kind of like then when you find that up is all you ever really needed, right? I didn't know who I was. I didn't know whose I was. I had no purpose. I had no idea of a destiny. I had a legacy that was nothing but pain and despair and sorrow. That was my legacy. Everything that I had, that I would have left behind in the lives and hearts of people that loved me and knew me, were worse off for knowing me. Worse off for me being in their life because I was a taker. I was selfish, self-centered, self-absorbed, self-conscious. I was all those manifestations of self that literally broke me in a million pieces, right? So for me to get here and think that it was just about not drinking and doing other things, that was the farthest thing from my mind. I came here for a different life. I came here for the possibility because I met the guy. I met that guy, right? John Williams, rest his soul. He's passed on now. He was the guy that showed me it's okay to be who you are and who you were created to be. He showed me that there's no limitations to what we can accomplish in life if we're committed to it. He showed me that the only limitations that was keeping me down and in a place of complete brokenness was my own self-imposed limitations. The things that I told myself and also told you for the reasons that I was there, right? So when I started to journey into this thing and what we have been doing for the last several weeks, you know, when I got to We Agnostics, it was like, holy smokes, the way I think it is just isn't the way it is. Everything that I thought I knew about anything was flawed. It was misguided. It was broken, right? And I think that's what happens when people at the core are selfish and self-centered. You know, every decision that we make is based on satisfaction, ease, and comfort. I gotta get mine, right? Every decision I make with every human being that I interact with is all about what I'm going to get, the reward, the payoff, right? So I make decisions based on that with other people that later place me in a position to be hurt. That's what the book says. This is accurate for my life, and I know I'm a real alcoholic. I know I suffer from the disease of alcoholism, whether I'm drinking or not. Right? I know that physically, that when I put it in, I can't stop. And when I'm stopped, I can't stop starting. That's the most important piece of the deal, right? So I have this mania that happens in my mind where I am so distraught from all the regret and the shame and the fear and the remorse and the loneliness and the bitterness and the feeling like that failure and that loser and surely, absolutely sure that you were judging, that you were looking at me like that. That your opinion of me, whether we had a conversation ever or not, that's what you thought of me. You know why? Because that's what I thought of me. Whatever I thought you were thinking, it was a mirror of what I felt like inside. Right? So I get to this place and I thought I knew a little bit about God. I was brought up in that deal, right? You know what? Every time we read this prayer up here, this saying up here, right? To me, it's a prayer. It's a request to God. To Lord, let your love shine through me like a fog light. My sponsor told me a long time ago, prior to doing stuff where he says, Joe, he says, God can't live in a cesspool. If there's anything to know about God, this most high God, this creator of all things, is that he is a holy God and he's a perfect God. Unblemished. And he can't associate with that which is full of that. Full of what you got. Lust, greed, pride, you know, selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, inconsideration, pride, ego, you know, all that stuff. I could read that prayer and that would look like something that was so far outside the realm of my possibility in my entire lifetime, because it was just something that I would look at and I would say, that's impossible. I'll never get there. I'll never have a relationship with God. I'll never feel, you know, I may, because all my life, I didn't disbelieve God. I was a believer. But I had no relationship. I never pursued a relationship. You follow me? I had, my addiction was to the world. Right? So, you know, even the fact that I believed, and it's not like I didn't disbelieve, I never had relationships. So I never felt the presence of God. I never sensed His protection. I never, you know what I mean? I never had that connection thing, right? Well, the reason is because it says it right here. It says actually, let's see here. Actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. We are born with it. It's in our DNA, right? It may be obscured, and here's the reason that I never felt it, Him. Never sensed Him. Never felt protected. You know, because I was running the show, no wonder I didn't feel protected. No wonder I didn't feel safe. No wonder I didn't feel loved. I was dictating the very ills that I harbored. I produced the stuff that the side effects were rotting me from the inside out. Right? It says, it may be obscured by calamity. Calamity that I might say, I created. By pomp. Right? What chokes us off from the sunlight of the Spirit. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things. My God, I did never worship God, ever. I acknowledge Him, but I didn't worship Him. I worship nice cars, money, girls, all of that stuff. So, no wonder. No wonder I ended up here, right? No wonder I had to have something to erase or numb what was going on the inside. Because no matter what I chased, no matter what I attempted to get to feel ease and comfort, it just wouldn't fit into that God hole on the inside, right? And it never stuck because of the darkness that lied within me, right? It says, but in some form or other, it is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves and miraculous demonstrations of that power in human lives are facts as old as man himself. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was part of our makeup, just as much as we have just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes, and this is we agnostic. This is chapter 4, right? Next chapter, we're making that decision. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly. Where do we do that? Right? But He was there. He was much a fact as we were. We found the great reality, deep capitalized, great reality, God, deep down within us. In the last analysis, it is only there that He may be found. It was so with us. You know, when I understood this, I understood why I had to do this investigation. I had to search out my flaw. I had to uncover my brokenness. I had to find out why I was broken. I had to find out. Because, you know why? My life depended on it. It was my life. It was the rest of my life. It was either that or just take myself out. Because I couldn't go another day feeling the way I felt. Right? It says, if we can only clear the ground a bit, if our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, prejudging, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. That's capital broad highway. It says, with this attitude, you cannot fail. Well, my goodness. I don't know that I ever heard that in the meeting, because before I opened this book, I never heard any of this stuff. I may have heard it, but I certainly wasn't listening, right? It sounded too deep and cosmic for me. So they're leading us to this place where all I need, motivated by where I'm at when I get here, is the willingness to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity. It asks us that question, the cornerstone, this arch that we're building through which we'll walk a free man and woman. It says, do I now believe, or am I willing to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity? I had proof sitting right across from the table from me with John. I had it. It was right there. When he told me a story about where he came from, it's exactly where I came from. different circumstances, but same brokenness, right? Why wouldn't I be willing? I wanted to die. I hated my guts. There was no argument left about the entertainment of a possible relationship with God. I mean, why would I at that point, if I was seriously honest with myself that I had this death sentence, why would I have any argument from a man that's sitting across the table from me saying, this, all you need to do is be willing to believe. Just be willing. Right? Now, once I'm willing, we do the third step prayer. We said this last week, right? So, after we do the third step prayer, after we pray, God, I offer myself to thee to build with me and do with me as thou will. That's like I'm giving him, I am asking him and I was begging him to do with me as he would, not I would. I already knew what I could do. And that wasn't much, right? Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, a.k.a. defects, right? The victory over them, so that the relieving of them in the way I conduct my life would bear witness to those that I would help of your power, your love, and your way of life. Do I do this all the time? God, no. I am so regretful sometimes, and I beg him, please forgive me. And I also beg the people that I offend or that I may, you know, lose my temper with or what have you. Right? Nobody's perfect in this deal. The difference between me now and me then is I didn't care then. Today I really care. Because once you get this thing, you start to be disciplined by him, by your conscience. You start to develop this moral compass. When you hurt somebody, you know it and it hurts. And you can't live with yourself until you make amends. Why do you want to walk around with that? Because if I'm going to continue to walk around and do the same things, I'm going to dance on the cliff. All I need to do is just take one little step or lean into one little thing, and I'm off the edge. I'm crashing and burning, right? So it says, we thought well before taking this step, step three, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to him. Think of the language here. Abandon myself utterly to him with no reservations, with no conditions. I'm dying. I need relationship. What do I got to do? And that he wasn't going to, I mean, listen, I haven't heard of anybody coming down, you know, where he comes down, has an audible conversation with you. But John was there to lead me. John was the man, the angel that God put in my life in order to take me on this journey, just like everybody's sponsor in here, right? Remember, it was what I knew about relationships, authenticity, integrity, honor, intimacy, right? Honesty. Not just in relationships, but in recovery, in business, in, you know, in all the family, in all those things, in all those domains, right? It was what I knew that was killing me and hurting them. It was what I didn't know that was going to save my life. Right? So I come to this place, and I'm still kind of that victim, right? I'm still blaming other people for my stuff. How do I correct them? It says, though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect. Our decision being step three, turning our will, which is our thoughts, and our lives, which is our actions, over to the care of God as we understood them. Right? This decision was vital and crucial, but it could have little permanent effect. Little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Blocking us from what? The power of God. The power I need because I'm powerless. That's the power we're after here, right? I'm without power. I don't have the ability to overcome myself or overcome alcoholism. I had to have his power, right? Lack of power, that was our dilemma. They told me that. But But if he's going to shine through me like a fog light, I'm thinking like a little flashlight maybe to begin with, but a fog light, well, I got to do some deep dive, right? So it says, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. Therefore, we started upon a personal inventory. This was step four. Made a searching, a.k.a. fearless. We're going to search out the facts. Fearless. And a seeking and fearless inventory. So when we say seeking, we're going to search out the flaws. We're going to search out the facts of what's broken. And we're going to be fearless about it. That means we're going to face those facts. We're going to face them. We're going to acknowledge them. This is who I am. It's time for me to become vulnerable. It's time for me to open up. It's time for me to stop the masquerade. Stop the facade. I got to be transparent here. My life is on the line. It's only my life, but it is my life. And if I'm going to continue to breathe and live to good purpose, I need at this juncture to trust my sponsor. Right? So he likens this to a commercial inventory, which is a fact-finding and a fact-facing process. So searching, fearless, and it's an effort to discover the truth, another word for moral, right, about the stock and trade, me, right? It says, one object is to disclose damage or unsellable goods, right, defects of character, to get rid of them promptly without regret, you know, and we do this for... anybody that's ever taken an inventory, all you do is you just take an inventory of your stock, of what you have in your possession, in your business. You know, you go in, you see what you have, you see what you don't have, so you can make reorder. But you also want to find out what's broken or unsellable, right? There may be things that aren't selling. Why would you keep that in your business? Why would you not replace that with something that could be more popular, that would make you money? It's the same thing here. If I'm a habitual liar, right, why would I want to keep that, right? If I'm a thief, why would I want to keep stealing? These are things that will keep me who I've become, not get me to who I want to be, right? It's like I see recovery as this opportunity to be this relationship that I'm seeking here to be a pure, clear glass of water. And I come in here as a dark, filthy, nasty, dark glass of water, contaminated, infected with all the things that I have been chasing and have been, you know, filling me up with all this garbage on the inside. And I come in here, I say, I want this. That's what I want. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care. That's what I want. That's what I want to achieve. But if you get in here and you just simply get to this point and you start, you know, taking a little of that dirty water and throwing it, you're still using the same vile language. Yeah, I'm going to pour a little bit in there. You know, no big deal. It's not going to hurt anybody, you know. I'm doing this or I'm doing that. I'm going to sordid places. I'm still hanging out. Pour a little more in there. You know, let's go to the casino. That's not, I'm done drinking. Pour a little more in there. And then all of a sudden, I've been infected and contaminated with the very things I'm trying to get rid of. Makes sense? Right? This is not easy. This is big boy and big girl stuff. It really is. You know, those of us that feel so entitled, it's going to be really, really hard to do this. Right? So it says, first we search out the flaws in our makeup which had caused our failure. Being convinced that self manifested in various ways, selfishness, self-centeredness, self-absorption, self-consumption, self-consciousness, on and on and on, was what had defeated us. My pursuit of what I thought I wanted, right? We considered its common manifestations. Resentment is the number one offender. It says, selfishness, self-centeredness, that we think is the root of our troubles. Driven by 100 forms of fear, 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking, self-pity, we step on the toes of our fellows and they retaliate. Sometimes they hurt us seemingly without provocation, but we invariably find that at some time in the past, we have made decisions based on self, driven by our pursuit of what we thought we wanted or needed, made decisions based on self with these people that later place us in a position to be hurt. So our troubles, we think, are basically of our own making. They arise out of ourselves, and the alcoholic is an extreme example of self-will run riot, though he usually doesn't think so. Boy, Bill knew us, didn't he? He knew me. He knew me dead on. So it says resentment. We're going to do this inventory. And if you look at this book, right, you always get to this diagram on this page, right? Page 64, 65. And the diagram is simply to show us the layout of how this thing is going to go, right? But if you only went, if you get stuck on that there's only three columns because that's what the sketch here, the diagram shows, you're never going to get to where you need to go. You're never going to get there. You know why? Because all we do is address the very things that got us here in the first three columns. The very thing that broke all our relationships and put us in complete loneliness and turmoil is the first three columns. What are they? You got to remember, resentment means to re-feel, right? To feel again. It's a Latin word. It comes from a Latin word. It's called resentire, and it means to re means again, and sentire means to feel. So to feel again, feel again, feel again. When you piss me off, or you do something that hurts me or threatens me, I feel it again. I play it in my mind. It consumes me. You do it, I walk away, and it's still running me. It's running me till I go to sleep. Right? And then I get up, and like I said last week, we turn on a revenge machine. Right? We start plotting. Right? How am I going to get my pound of... Listen, this is how we do it, right? This is how we do it. And the more I play it over and over, the more innocent I become and the more guilty you are. I've always been the guy that wanted judgment for you, but mercy for me. Right? So... says, resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stem all forms of spiritual disease. For we've not only been mentally and physically ill, we've been spiritually sick. Now listen to this, because I had this completely backwards, and it cost me 16 years of my life on the street, right? It says, when the spiritual maladies overcome, then we straighten out mentally and physically. How often did I come into this program and say, I need to get my job. I need to get a little money in my pocket. I need to get a car. I need. And then maybe I'll do that other serious stuff. Never worked. So I would come in. I would acknowledge that I was truly an alcoholic. Knew that I couldn't overcome the problem myself. Vaguely sensing I would need a power greater than myself. I would need power from some other source, right? And I would say, okay, I'm in, but it never was a decision. Because the only way a decision is valid is if you validate it with action. See, the action is married to the decision. It's either that or it's a nice intention, right? So all of you that have said you're in and get the first two pieces of the puzzle, powerlessness, power, it's time to decide. Now, if you say I'm in and you tell somebody you've been working on the third step for 6 months, BS. It's garbage. It's, you know what it is? It's like, who are you telling that to? Right? I used to be in that conspiracy theory thing. I'll buy your doo-doo if you buy my doo-doo. Right? It's just nothing more than one of those intentions that we wanted credit for all our lives, but people were judging us by our actions. Right? So it says this decision was vital and crucial, right? Vital and crucial, but would have little permanent effect, basically no effect at all, unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves, which had been blocking us off. So we started upon a personal inventory, right? So the first column is certainly, it says, it, and here's the, there's exact instructions. It says, in dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. Period. Right? It says we listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. That's the first exercise. We do this by exercise in a columned inventory form from top to bottom. We don't go side to side. Bill knew that we don't think about two things real well at the same time. So he laid it out like this so we can concentrate on one exercise at a time. Just make the list, Joe. Just make the list. Don't look to the right. Just make the list. Because when you start writing that list, your pen just kind of like, it just flows, right? It's real easy for me to point out who really made me angry, because I came in here a victim, and this was my opportunity to really, you know, fortify that. And then we go back to the top of the list. For column two, it says, we asked ourselves why we were angry, period. So once I've completed my list, I go to the top, and next to each name or institution, you know, whether it was a penal institution or the legal system or, you know, religious deal or whatever it was, or dad or mom or whoever, right? Next to each name, I write what they did to make me angry. There's not much space there, so I don't get to write a story. Stories are over at this point. It's like, be specific, list them separately, to the point. Because this is nothing more than a tickle, like a bullet point tickle guide, so that when we do a fifth step inventory, it will, we'll address what it is, and we'll drill down. That's why they say we get ready for a long talk, right? So once we've listed what they did to make us angry, which if you're a victim like I was, that's fun. That's easy. And then in the middle column, it asks us to address these things that were given to us by God that every human being has, called instincts. The very things needed for us to survive, to care for ourselves, to be one amongst men, to be in a community, to procreate, to financially support our families, and it also addresses our ambitions, right? The problem with those things are, I call them appetites. That's what they were for me, desires and appetites. Really important information, because Bill doesn't go into the instincts. You know, he wrote this thing in 39, and, you know, he was fairly newly sober himself. I mean, you know, he was 4 years sober, 3 years sober, 3.5 years sober. He's now addressing 11 and a half so years later a little bit more information that's vital to understand even what instincts are, why I have them, and how I overreach them, right? How I develop these liabilities inside me, these defects of character that really deteriorate and break my relationships with other people because I've become so selfish and so self-consumed about me, 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 right? It says creation gave us instincts for a purpose. Creation being capitalized, God. Without them, we wouldn't be complete human beings. And this is every man, woman, and child. This is not just us. If men and women didn't exert themselves to be secure in their persons, made no effort to harvest food or construct shelter, there'd be no survival. Right? If they didn't reproduce, the earth wouldn't be populated. If there were no social instinct, if men cared nothing for the society of one another, there'd be no society. So these desires for the sex relation, the material and emotional security, and for companionship are perfectly necessary, right, and surely God-given. Right? We need those. Everybody's got them. It says, yet when these instincts, so necessary for our existence, often far exceed their proper functions, powerfully, blindly, and many times subtly, they drive us, dominate us, and insist upon ruling our lives. Our desires for sex, for material and emotional security, and for an important place in society often tyrannize us. That's not a good word. When thus out of joint, man's natural desires cause him great trouble, practically all the trouble there is. No human being, however good, is exempt from these troubles, but not every human being is an alcoholic. We're suffering from a disease that will surely kill us, right? Nearly every serious emotional, listen to this, because this is pretty big. Nearly every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct. Want too much or more than I need. Having a mind that's never okay with what I have. I always have to have something else. I always have to have more. The chase is on, right? And I hurt people through that pursuit. I hurt people. I devastate them because I don't care about them. I'm doing it for the payoff, right? I'm trying to masquerade. I'm trying to, you know, dress it up so they don't think I'm working them or gaming them. But that's not that. Remember, it always comes back. It always gets. People will find that out. I mean, listen. There's no better detectors of people's gaming us than sitting right here. We know when people are working us, right? It says when that happens, our great natural assets, these instincts, have turned into physical and mental liabilities. So step four is our vigorous and painstaking effort to discover what these liabilities in each of us have been and are. We want to find out exactly how, when, and where our natural desires have warped us, because they have consequences. When we hurt people, we develop remorse and regret. When we do things that we say we'd never do on the street, we develop shame. Overwhelming shame. When we do things that hurt our children or hurt our families, we develop shame and guilt and loneliness and despair. And guess what? It could have happened 20 years ago and I'm still suffering on the inside. That internal condition that I'm talking about, that we come in here and stop drinking, think it's going to go away. It never goes away until we address it right here, right? It says we wish to look squarely at the unhappiness this has caused ourselves and others. By discovering what our emotional deformities are, we can move toward their correction. See, if we still think it's them, we're looking at the wrong person. We need to identify the person in the mirror, because that's the source of all this carnage. Right? And when we were truly a victim, if we were a victim when we were children, somebody hurt us when we were children, we weren't guilty, we may not have started the ball rolling, but I can damn sure guarantee you we started one going. We held them hostage. We made sure we were going to get our pound of flesh. It happens all the time. Right? And I did it. I did it with my parents. I felt my dad didn't you know, pay enough attention to me. I mean, he only had 7 children. What about me? What about me, right? Why didn't you come to my ball game last week? Why don't you spend more time at home? You know, this victim, this, you know, I never took into account what he was doing and the sacrifices and the prices he paid to take care of our family, to make sure we were fed and clothed and sent to school. That wasn't important to me. I wanted that bike. I wanted this. I wanted that, right? And I held him. I can't even begin to tell you. And he died before I could make amends. Right? I was smoking crack when he died. This is back in the 80s. But through that loving man called my sponsor, he gave me an opportunity to go beyond the grave in a spiritual meditation and make amends to that man. And I did. And it was powerful. And it was real. Because this whole thing is about getting into the spirit world, right? If we're not going to attempt to do that, this is all a lie, right? Why would we even be doing that? This is truth. This is real. And I was relieved of that guilt. I was relieved of that remorse. So that's why we have these things. But we go from turning the instincts that God gave us into emotional deformities. Every serious emotional problem can be seen as a case of misdirected instinct, right? It's how we're at war with everyone. You know, envy, greed, coveting, you know, just it's a sickness, right? So anyway, it tells us to address these things after we've made the list and identified what they did to us and what was threatened. Was it my personal relationship with them? Was it my personal security with them, my health? The way I carry my, you know, with that, right? And then it talks about the emotional security, right? Was that threatened? Was my self-esteem threatened? Was my self-worth threatened? Was my financial security threatened? Did they steal from me? Did they slander me at work, you know, to threaten my job? So I identify that, right? Was my sexual security threatened, right? Did you make a play on my girl? Did you do this? Did you do that? Or did I have to go to jail? You go to jail, you're threatening your sexual security is affected, right? Just saying. And my ambitions, what I aspired to have in my life, what I was always, you know, going after. Now, let me read you what the book says, because if I just identify that, and I feel my life is affected in a negative way by you, and I don't go any further, I'm still the victim, and you're still at fault. So I've got to check something out here. It says this. It says we turn, now this is the next page, past the diagram. It says we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. Wait a minute. So what I just already did didn't hold the key to the future. It holds the key. All it does is hold a reflection of the past. You understand that? Who they were, what they did, and what they affected. It's all back there. That's the chapter that's been written that I can't change, right? It says, so we turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course, right? So then it talks about a prayer, and then it gets to the middle of the page. It says, referring to our list again, right? So we're back to the list. Putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Down at the bottom it says, but did not we ourselves set the ball rolling? So in the fourth column, I'm taking off the V on my forehead that's etched in the middle of my, you know, it looks like, right? You know what I mean? That V stands for victim. And I'm going to start taking accountability for my life. I'm going to start seeing where I played a part, what I did to set this whole thing in motion. And if I'm truly honest about it, I will see that I played a part in everything, right? And if I didn't play the part in the initial wrong, I started a part, right? It says, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done, we resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Greedy, lustful, inconsiderate, right? Slothful, gluttonous, prideful, right? What are the deformities? What are the emotional deformities that fueled my actions that set this whole thing in motion in the first place? Where really most of those people on the list, they just retaliated for my game. They said, no, this is not okay what you're doing. And exposed my deal. They retaliated. And you know what? You know what completely went dead? Was the relationship. I'd drop them like a piece of garbage and walk on to the next one. And I'd harbor it forever, right? It says, so column four is simply identifying what I did to set the ball in motion. You know? Was I self-centered? Was I, you know, what did I do to have this all come about? And what were the defects of character that motivated me? Fear, inconsideration, dishonesty, selfishness, and the like. The seven deadlies, right? So I identify all that stuff. And I finally see who you got when I showed up. And I stopped asking, why is my life so screwed up and why is everybody else doing this to me? And I started going, oh my God, how could this not have happened given how I was showing up? Of course my life is in tatters. Of course my life is broken in 1,000 pieces because of the way I played it. And for the first time in my life, I started to have this shift in my thinking. You know, when you become responsible for all the carnage in your past, all of a sudden you're identifying pieces of you that must be fixed. And the only way in order to do that is to really call on Him. Right? And especially when you drill down in step five, when you confess all these things and you become vulnerable and transparent and spill it out. Why? It's only my life. It's my life. My whole future depends on this. It's not like some, you know, trivial little thing that I'm going to do. This sets the stage for the blueprint of becoming the man that God created me to be. And it's simply by identifying what's broken getting rid of that design, that philosophy of life that I thought that I could, that was locked down in, and start to incorporate this new design, right? And then, you know, it says, so referring to our list, putting out of our minds the wrongs others have done, we resolutely look for our own mistakes. I list that. Where had I been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened, and other things? And I listed that, right? So now I have the blueprint to do five. I have the defects that are listed to do six and seven. And I have the people to identify who's necessary for eight and nine. So anybody that tells you to burn your four step, run away. They don't know what they're talking about. Putting in a bottle and sending it, you know, really? Like that's going to do something. That's going to remove that stuff. No. What's going to remove that stuff is me going to those people and making amends to those people and setting right the wrongs. That's when I'm going to be forgiven. That's when I'm going to start to experience those promises they talk about in that come in the ninth step phase. Right? This is critical. You know? When you make that third step decision, you're writing. You're immediately engaged in this. You know, when Danny read Spiritual Experience, it says what often takes place in a few months, could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. How long do you want to be sick? How long do you want to roll the dice with your life hanging in the balance? Right? I hope and pray that if you've been under some other assumption about what this is, that I have opened your eyes and opened your heart, because it's only your life. Thanks.
Thanks, buddy.
Thank you, sir. Help me thank the speaker once more. I have to admit, I've called you Fred a couple of times.
There's that pound of flesh.
At this time, I'm going to introduce the secretary, Heather, so she can give us her secretary's report.
Hi, my name is Heather, and I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Heather.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Justin to come up and read the recovered statement. We read this notice to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
I'm Justin. I'm a recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Justin.
Hey, Justin.
We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. The presence a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction of alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of alcoholic centers in his mind, rather than in his body. We are now saying where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have been recovered.
...1940s style big book sponsorship from the forward to the second edition Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. And among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I get a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? Is there anyone that needs a sponsor? Please stand up or raise your hand. All right. If you don't have a big book sponsor, your life depends on it, so I suggest you get one. We have some announcements coming up. I mean, some announcements over here. What do we got? The Broward County Intergroup. We have some volunteer opportunities. Where's the Big Book Seminar? Oh, here it is. We got the Big Book Seminar. This is going to be super cool. If you've never been to one, you should definitely go. I've been. It changed my life. It's right here locally. We're really privileged to have one. It's going to be Mother's Day weekend, and it's only $30. So you should definitely sign up for it and get involved. Then we have a Fellowship of the Spirit, which is going to be right here in this building, June 22nd and 23rd. You better get your tickets quickly because it's selling out. Mickey and Marie are coming in from Denver, Colorado. It's going to be AA and Al-Anon. You can see Mike in the back of the room for tickets, or you can log on. Then we have the state convention that's going to be coming up in August, and a women's conference that's also going to be in August. There's plenty of, of course, we got the Jersey Shore Roundup. And if you need to do service and want to get involved in your own sobriety, then I suggest you get with one of the people that knows about these events. We have CDs, big book, or large print big books, the little red book, big book dictionaries, and mugs for sale. We meet here every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15. We ask that you be courteous and ready to begin. Please join us Monday nights. We have a big book study meeting where the big book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30, and the big book study starts at 7:15. I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Heather. I want to announce that tonight we have tonight's session and all the past speaker podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study. And those who wish to thank this tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. And I'd like to say I'm really glad everybody showed up tonight. And just a quick reminder, there's a 75-foot no-smoking vape zone in front of the doors. When you leave here tonight, do not light up or vape until you are 75 feet from the front doors. Thank you for your consideration and cooperation. And at this time, let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. The kingdom, the power, and all
the
glory, forever and ever.
Amen. We'll see you guys next Monday or next Thursday.
just can't get it right. It doesn't matter how hard I try.
Thank you. this little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Everywhere I go, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine.
Thank you.